When a White Lives Matter rally in Huntington Beach, California flopped over the weekend, counter-protesters expressed relief and said they felt victorious. And throughout the country, dozens of white extremist rallies were planned last weekend, and in the end, hardly anyone showed up. Our next guest says the reasons are complex, but one possible answer is that far-right movements are growing more disorganized and being pushed further into the fringes. Brandi Zadrozny is an investigative reporter for NBC News who covers extremism and disinformation. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks.
These White Lives Matter rallies were organized by many of the groups alleged to have participated in the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol. What exactly were they planning?
So a number of self-described neo-Nazis and fascists were planning to rally in states all across the country for this White Lives Matter cause. This is a movement, a reactionary movement to the Black Lives Matter movement. It was trotted out in 2015 by some Texas neo-Nazis, and it was sort of had new life breathed into it this last week by some people in some Telegram channels. Mm-hmm. It didn't turn out the way that we had feared that it might, luckily.
Right. Right. We saw images in Raleigh, North Carolina, where anti-racist protesters marched behind signs that said, "We accept your surrender." What did end up happening at these demonstrations? What was seen there? Who were the players who were part of it?
What we saw on the streets was a lone neo-Nazi, someone carrying a White Lives Matter sign. But it was really a single person, maybe a couple. But what we did see, too, is, as you just said, in North Carolina, a vigorous response from anti-racists and self-described anti-fascists who came out, they said, to protect their town from this oncoming threat. And they held counter rallies in Philadelphia. There was a picnic and a pizza party in Huntington Beach. We saw a much more vigorous response. Hundreds of people came out to protest and also just to sort of look. And they literally ran Nazis off the streets.
Well, since the insurrection, large extremist groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers have splintered along with their social media presence. This is a big part of your reporting. And experts suggest that's because of legal trouble members of these groups are now facing since this Capitol riot. I mean, could this also, though, just be a case that they're less visible?
Yes, to all of that. There's a couple things going on, right? 2020 was an incredibly bold time for extremism in America. And, you know, they were organizing openly on Facebook. They stated their plans in open forums over and over and over again. And what we're seeing now since the Capitol siege is the sort of backlash from that. You know, extremist movements have largely been driven underground, and that's for a couple of reasons. They're facing increased scrutiny. They're facing it from the media, people like me who are constantly on their forums, and also law enforcement agencies. The federal charges from the Capitol attacks are at like 360. Many of those, I think something like 10% of those people are affiliated with the Proud Boys or with the Oath Keepers, and they are facing the harshest of penalties. We're also seeing infighting because of that, Proud Boys turning on each other, Proud Boys acting as informants. And then in addition to that, you have a vigorous movement by leftists, mostly self-described anti-fascists, who are making it a really difficult time to be an extremist in America because they use open source intelligence techniques to find and out real life identities of people aligned with these movements. And that costs you sometimes your family, your job. It's very costly. So for a lot of reasons, these groups have been really disrupted.
Brandi, could it also be simply that demonstrations and rallies are not at the core of power for white supremacists? I'm thinking about how we learned some of the insurrectionists at the Capitol in January were law enforcement officers and other members of a community that can exert power in other ways. Like what we know of the KKK members, their outward demonstrations were mainly to stoke fear, but in their day-to-day lives, they were able to invoke easily other parts of their agenda.
Yeah, I think that that's really clear, is that what works in this country and beyond is it works a lot better to enact what is in effect like racist principles and racist ideologies through political policies, stuff like that, rather than show up in a KKK hood. But I do think that we can't discount the ideas that, especially from neo-Nazi groups, like these are violent extremist groups, and they have carried out extreme violence. And that doesn't mean just because we didn't see them in these cities marching with hoods on their heads, that doesn't mean that these extremist movements are gone, and that doesn't mean they're any less dangerous. In fact, you know, the Washington Post just had a report yesterday that shows the opposite, that, you know, domestic terrorism has gotten to new highs. It's driven by white supremacists, anti-Muslims, anti-government extremists on the far right. These groups are still there. They're just not marching in the streets.
You've been reporting deeply on this movement for a while. What other threads of coverage are you focused on?
I mean, I think that the technology aspect of this is really important. 2020, although it was a very bold year politically for extremists, I think that they faced a new deplatforming. And what we know about deplatforming is that when you sort of turn down the volume on this toxic or racist content, you know, you kick white supremacists and other extremists off their platforms, what we have is sort of a nicer place to be. It's harder for them to recruit. It doesn't infect the rest of the country like it did in 2020. But what also happens is that as these people move to closed spaces and smaller spaces, what it does is those smaller spaces become a place that more easily radicalize those members, and it becomes more toxic for those members. And then it spurs those people to do more real life violence. And that is what researchers I talk to are worried about. You know, they're all collectively holding their breath at this point. And that's what I think we need to focus on.
That's investigative reporter Brandi Zadrozny, who is following this story as part of NBC's week-long series, American Extremism. Brandi, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Tanya.